Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet him, greet him, treat him, and street him. Today's date is December 3rd, 2015, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is One Thing Leads to Another, Idariusisimab for Dabigatran Reversal. And our guest skeptic is Dr. Ryan Radecki. He's a clinical practice lead at Kaiser Permanente Northwest and clinical assistant professor of emergency medicine, the University of Texas Medical School at Houston. He has this great blog called Emergency Medicine Literature of Note. It is billed as Musings on Publications and Studies Relevant to Emergency Medicine and Otherwise. Ryan also claims to be the only man alive to have been shot out of a cannon and sung backup vocals for the Rolling Stones. Welcome back to the SGM, Ryan, and please, please explain the cannon and Rolling Stone story.
Well, anything autobiographical is possible when you make false and outrageous claims.
Ah, false and outrageous. I was actually going to pick a Rolling Stone song because you sent me that information. And the one I looked at was called Too Much Blood. But you know what? I wasn't too sure about the lyrics.
They're a little bit dark.
A little bit, yeah. So then I thought, hey, there's this great 80s song by The Fix called One Thing Leads to Another. And it seemed to fit for today's episode. I mean, in this case, we have a pharmaceutical company that makes a drug to thin the blood and prevent clotting. The reality is people will bleed for various reasons while taking this new anticoagulant. Solution? The drug company comes up with another drug that can reverse the effects of the first drug.
So one thing leads to another.
Exactly. Well, why don't we start this episode of the SGM with a case presentation?
Yes, so let's imagine a 67-year-old man who presents with a history of atrial fibrillation and hypertension. He takes metoprolol, 50 milligrams, twice daily, and dabigatran, 150 milligrams, twice daily. He's been having mild epigastric pain for about a week, and then had one episode of coffee ground emesis that night. He arrives via ambulance with a blood pressure of 120 over 70, a heart rate of 74 beats per minute, and an oxygen saturation of 98% on room air.
And dabigatran is a non-vitamin K antagonist anticoagulant that works by inhibiting thrombin, and it is approved for the prevention and treatment of venous thromboembolism, and it's also approved for the treatment of non-valvular atrial fibrillation to prevent strokes.
And life-threatening bleeding can occur while taking dabigatran. Unlike warfarin that can be reversed in a variety of ways, there has been no feasible or effective method for the adjunctive treatment of these life-threatening bleeds in patients using dabigatran. The current method of removal, hemodialysis, is impractical in the vast majority of clinical situations.
No feasible reversal agent until now, Ryan, because Boehringer Ingelheim, the maker of dabigatran, has developed a monoclonal antibody fragment called idariusisimab.
And the FDA has approved idariusisimab in October as the first reversal agent for dabigatran.
And as far as I know, as of today, it's not been approved for use in Canada. But let's give a clinical question that we're going to try to answer on today's podcast.
And the question is idariusisimab safe and effective treatment adjunct for patients taking dabigatran with serious bleeding or require an emergent procedure?
And the reference for this?
Is Pollock CV et al. Idariusisimab for dabigatran reversal in the New England Journal of Medicine this past 2015.
And so what was the population that they had included in the study?
Patients 18 years of age or older reported to have been taking dabigatran.
And it was a bit complicated because they had two groups. They had group A and group B. What was group A?
Group A is patients with overt, uncontrollable, or life-threatening bleeding.
And then group B?
Patients who required urgent invasive procedures that could not be delayed at least 8 hours.
And then what was the intervention?
All patients received 5 grams of intravenous idariusisimab in the form of two 2.5 gram boluses given 15 minutes apart.
And what did they compare it to, Ryan?
There was no comparison. This was just a prospective observational trial.
Yeah, no comparison. Well, how about the outcomes? They had primary and secondary outcomes. So can you go through those?
Well, the primary outcome is the maximum percentage reversal of the anticoagulant effect of dabigatran within 4 hours, assessed by measurement of the dilute thrombin time or recurrent clotting time.
And their secondary outcome?
Secondary outcomes were reduction in the concentration of unbound dabigatran, restoration of hemostasis, and then suspected thrombotic events or deaths by 90 days.
And so the authors concluded, quote, adariacisomab completely reversed the anticoagulation effects of dabigatran within minutes, end of quote. So now we're going to go through the quality checklist, Ryan, for observational trials. And for observational trials, we have 11 questions. And the first question is, did this study address a clearly focused issue?
Well, yes and no. To measure percentage dabigatran reversal, a study really needs no more than just healthy volunteers in a controlled environment. These patients, however, were recruited in a clinical setting more suited to providing patient-oriented outcomes, like their secondary outcomes, rather than pharmacokinetic data.
And did the authors use an appropriate method to answer their question?
In answering their primary outcome, percentage of dabigatran reversal, they used surrogate measures of thrombin time and eucarin clotting time. Based on prior evidence, however, these surrogates do seem to be correlated to unbound dabigatran, however.
And so the third question, was the cohort recruited in an acceptable way?
Well, no and yes. The cohort, like I mentioned before, was not recruited in an appropriate fashion with regards to their primary outcome. Regarding secondary clinical outcomes, the recruitment is reasonable and performed in an appropriate clinical setting. However, there is, there's no comparator with which to interpret any of the clinically relevant outcomes. The study protocol states each patient acts as their own control, but this is only sort of relevant regarding the pharmacokinetic data and assumes the post-treatment baseline reflects the patient's normal pre-treatment baseline. Patients in Group A, enrolled with supposedly overt or life-threatening bleeding necessitating emergency reversal, required packed cell transfusions only approximately half the time. And lastly, the study does not report the number of patients screened for enrollment, nor the reasons regarding any patient's lack of inclusion, resulting in inability to assess the magnitude of selection bias.
Wow, so that was a big answer. Okay, question four, was the exposure accurately measured to minimize the bias?
No, patients were enrolled if there was a report of dabigatran use, but the design of the study made it infeasible to actually monitor the exposure. Then, patients were excluded from the efficacy analysis if their initial coagulation surrogates were normal. And of those enrolled, nearly a quarter had normal thrombin time or eucarin clotting time.
Well, how about question number five? Was the outcome accurately measured to minimize bias?
Again, yes and no. The primary outcome of dabigatran reversal is measured via surrogates, and these are reliably sampled in the relevant population. Assessments of clinical outcomes were subjectively surveyed.
Question six, have the authors identified all important confounding factors?
No, the authors don't report the presence or absence of other antiplatelet or other anticoagulants in the patients taking dabigatran, although it is probably reasonable to assume these medications should not have concomitantly been prescribed.
Was the follow-up of subjects complete enough?
Yes, follow-up of at least 1 month is a reasonable time frame to capture potentially treatment association events, and then they followed many patients even longer than that.
And how precise are the results? Is the estimate of risk?
The measurement of coagulation reversal is reliably precise, and samples were taken frequently throughout the first 24 hours following treatment.
And do you believe the results?
Well, yes and no. The measurement of thrombin time, eucarin clotting time, and unbound dabigatran are reliable and believable. The clinically relevant patient-oriented outcomes, the hemostatic outcomes, they're poorly described and really just can't be interpreted in context.
All right, question 10. Can the results be applied to the local population?
Well, that's unsure. It is unclear whether the results of this study can be reliably applied in clinical practice. It's likely that adariacisomab binds a substantial portion of circulating dabigatran. The coagulation parameters in the study generally normalize, with some exceptions. There is little evidence, however, tying the use of adariacisomab and the normalization of these coagulation parameters to clinically relevant cessation and bleeding.
All right, the last question then is, do the results of this study fit with other available evidence?
Well, yes, regarding the primary outcome of pharmacokinetic and surrogate laboratory data. These are consistent with the prior healthy volunteer data. There is, although, a paucity of relevant clinical data, which, although is not surprising given the stage of development of adariacisomab.
All right, so why don't we go through the results? This is a preliminary report on an ongoing cohort study expected to recruit up to 300 patients at 400 centers in 38 countries. This report includes 90 patients with a median age of 77 years, and 96% of the patients were on dabigatran for atrial fibrillation. Now, they had those two groups, Group A and Group B. What were the results for Group A?
Well, so there's group A. There's 51 patients who are in the group A, and their key features are that there's 18 intracranial hemorrhages, 20 gastrointestinal bleeds, 9 traumas, and then 11 other types of bleeds. And this adds up to 58 rather than 51 because some patients had more than one type of bleeding.
And how about group B, the ones that were needing an urgent procedure?
This was 39 patients, and the indication for the urgent invasive procedure was quite varied, but the most common indication was for 8 of the patients was bone fractures.
And then there was 22 patients out of the group A and group B combined. So 22 patients were excluded from analysis because at study entry time, they had dilute thrombin times that were within the normal range. This left over 68 patients in total with abnormal results, which were the focus of their analysis. So what was the overall primary outcome from this study?
Well, maximum percentage reversal of the anticoagulant effect of dabigatran, as measured by dilute thrombin time and eCAR and clotting time, within 4 hours was 100%.
And so let's go through some of the secondary outcomes. And the first one was the reduction in the concentration of unbound dabigatran.
Of the patients with dabigatran levels that were tracked, a handful of patients in group B had markedly elevated dabigatran levels, and these patients never entirely normalized. Dabigatran levels dropped to their nadir in these patients after completion of the infusion, but began rising again within an hour. The main implication for this is that for patients with super therapeutic dabigatran levels, like those who may be bleeding because of acute renal failure, they may not get full reversal with just the standard dosing as described in this paper.
And how about the restoration of hemostasis?
Only 38 of the 51 patients in group A could be evaluated for ongoing bleeding, and it took an average of 11.4 hours to reach clinical hemostasis. There were 36 out of 39 patients in group B who underwent an invasive procedure, and normal operative hemostasis was reported in 92% of those.
And then looking at the death rate by 90 days, how many people died?
There were 18 deaths in total, 9 in each of the two groups. Half of the deaths occurred over a week after enrollment.
And then the thrombotic events.
There were 5 thrombotic events up to 90 days.
All right, so that covers the results section. And we did get kind of nerdy when we were going through those quality checklists. So this next part is going to be more commentary. And it seems that more and more patients are anticoagulated these days with these non-vitamin K antagonists. And some of these people are going to bleed, and we're going to need information on how best to treat them in the emergency department.
Oh, quite true, Ken. But this, unfortunately, is sort of a disappointing publication regarding the safety and efficacy of vidarucizumab for the reversal of anticoagulation in the setting of dabigatran use. It, frankly, is kind of hard to think of a good justification for the publication of these really interim results.
Well, they suggested that the data reflects important insights into the clinical outcomes of patients treated with vidarucizumab. However, they acknowledge a major limitation of their study was the lack of a control group.
Yeah, and their explanation is that they feel it's unethical to perform a placebo-controlled study in the setting of life-threatening bleeding risk. But this stance assumes that the untested therapy is actually clinically effective and safe in a real-world setting without ever being tested.
And while most reported coagulation parameters normalized within minutes, and most unbound dabigatran levels dropped to a level below detection, the median investigator reported to hemostasis was not reported for over 11 hours in patients with overt bleeding.
Yeah, and it's not clear whether this reflects a lack of true clinical efficacy, or whether there are just simply confounders related to the individual patient's conditions that are resulting in the long delays to hemostasis. Regardless, the publication of these very interim results still seem unwarranted given the content presented.
Well, such a presentation might be justified based on safety evaluation, given the fast-track approval of this antidote, but a cohort size of only 90 patients is almost certainly too small to detect any pattern of adverse events.
And the report of periprocedural hemostasis is also questionable, particularly considering the procedure list. While a handful of significant surgical cases are included, several interventions are typically minimally invasive laparoscopic procedures, and the list of quote-unquote surgeries also includes such procedures as cutaneous abscess IND, lumbar punctures, placement of dialysis catheters, or the placement of ureteral stents. these are not necessarily procedures that you're going to have significant bleeding complications from. No truly reliable conclusion can be drawn regarding the clinical effectiveness of idarucizumab for procedural hemostasis for these urgent procedures.
And you know what? Another concern regarding the trial was the 22 patients who received the drug and were subsequently found to have normal clotting levels. So this means that about 25%, about a quarter of patients receiving a drug that was not necessary and exposing those patients to potential risk of adverse reactions.
Yeah, without a routinely available, rapidly feasible method for the detection of therapeutic dabigatran levels, widespread clinical usage of this could be fraught with waste. And that's especially relevant considering the expected cost of each dose of idarucizumab is about $3,400. Finally, it should be mentioned, of course, that this trial was funded by the manufacturer and sponsor, Boehringer Ingelheim, who also had a role in study design. Many authors, as well as the author of the accompanying editorial, report many financial relevant conflicts of interest.
Well, you know, Ryan, many trials are sponsored by the pharmaceutical industry, and it does not necessarily make the results wrong, but it probably should make us more skeptical of the results. But let's comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to our conclusions.
Well, I would say that we agree that idarucizumab rapidly normalizes abnormal coagulation parameters associated with dabigatran use, but its suspected clinical effectiveness and safety just cannot be confirmed at this time.
Well, how about a bottom line then?
Well, idarucizumab is here, at least in the United States, and, you know, it probably works, but its patient-oriented efficacy and safety are still pending.
So can you bring us back to a case resolution then?
Getting back to our GI bleed on dabigatran, he's hemodynamically stable. You establish two large bore intravenous lines, and you group and cross them for 4 units of blood. Laboratory studies are sent off stat, gastroenterology is called to the emergency department. They take him to the procedure suite, and he's found to have a bleeding duodenal ulcer.
So then how are you going to take this new information and apply it clinically?
It's really too early to know how to clinically apply this preliminary research and really how to target this therapy to the specific patients that will benefit and how to withhold it from those for whom it's not going to benefit.
So that's going to make it hard to have a conversation with a patient, but can you give us a little example of how you might approach this and talk at the bedside?
Well, I might say something along the lines of, you are having a serious bleed. It has been made worse because of the blood thinner you take to prevent strokes. We are getting some blood for you. The gastroenterologist is on their way to take you to the operating room. If you become unstable, I can give you a new drug just approved that seems effective and seems to work very quickly. However, we don't have much information on how well it works, and there may be safety issues that we have not yet identified.
There you go. You took a complicated thing and tried to package it up to something that you could say at the bedside, because I think this is going to be complicated for people. So that brings us to the Keener contest, and last week's winner was Gareth DeBuygen, an assistant clinical professor, Maine Medical Center, and Tufts University School of Medicine. Gareth knew it is harder to get an effective regional block of a more proximal hip fracture compared to a more distal hip fracture because the hip is innervated by the femoral nerve and the obturator nerve, but it also has a few other nerves that innervate it. And given that this fracture is in and up at the joint capsule, these are only going to be partially blocked by a 3-in-1 block, and so there's likely to be some residual pain from a non-blocked nerve. Ryan, what's the question this week?
Sticking with our case here today, let's name at least 3 ways to reverse Coumadin in a patient with life-threatening bleeding.
Yeah, we can't forget that because people still are going to be coming in on Coumadin and bleeding as well. And I am so glad that you did not ask the classic question of naming the vitamin K-dependent clotting factors.
Well, it's not really appropriate to ask a trivia question if I don't know the answer.
Well, if you know 3 ways to reverse Coumadin in a patient having a serious bleed, then send your answers to thesgem@gmail.com. Put Keener in that subject line, and the first person to correctly answer their question will receive a cool skeptical prize. I do want to point out a couple of FOMED resources that are out there. There's Rebel EM, The Bottom Line, the Canadian Agency for Drug and Technologies in Health, and of course, Ryan's EM Literature of Note. And I'll put links in the show note. Thanks again, Ryan, for being on the SGEM.
Pleasure and honor as always.
Hey, are you working on any new great posts for your site?
I work on a lot of posts. I'm almost up to 1,000 now. The most interesting thing recently, I'm not sure that antibiotics are going to be used for diverticulitis a whole lot longer.
Ooh. Well, we look forward to seeing that post. Hey, can you give us the SGM tagline before we sign off?
Of course. Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on The Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next week.